Hi, my name's Stephen, I'm an addict.
Hi, Stephen.
Really weird watching Ned do the GSR announcement there. This meeting has been a part of my recovery, a big part of my recovery. When I first came into the rooms, I was going to meetings in Bethnal Green and East End. I couldn't actually get to meetings further away because I couldn't afford to get to meetings. I had to walk to meetings and get lifts to meetings for my first month in recovery. And people said, they talked about the basic text in various meetings, and East End meetings back then weren't terribly wealthy in terms of literature, etc. And I remember one time getting really angry because people kept talking about the basic text and saying, well, where can I get this book? And people said, you can get it in Trafalgar Square, the Trafalgar Square meeting. Now, I hadn't left my house for 5 years. I had lived in Bethnal Green. So Trafalgar Square sounded like they were telling me to go to the Sahara Desert to get this to get this book. But I eventually got to Trafalgar Square. My sponsor was on the home group at that time. And I ended up being alternate GSR. Penelope sponsored me into the role and the GSR in this group. And I used to sit just over there where Jessica's sitting. And I used to get so emotional when people picked up key rings. And it was a gratitude thing, you know. I was so happy to see people getting clean and getting this just constantly. And I still feel that when I see people pick up key rings. I have to say, though, it took me 9 months before I really realized there were other people doing this as well as me. At the start, I thought it was all about me. I didn't really realize the other. I know the other people were doing it, but when I came here and saw people picking up 9 months and I was thinking, oh, gee, other people doing this too. The level of self-obsession was something to behold. And, I told my sister I was doing. I spoke to my sister on social media and told her. I said, "Oh, I've been asked to share in Trafalgar Square." She said, "Oh, that's nice." She said, "Say hello to the pigeons." She didn't really get it at all. She didn't understand what Trafalgar Square means to me. Wow. You know, I have so much I want to share. I'll say a bit about today. I need to take it back a bit. In 2013, I was diagnosed with chronic ulcerative colitis, which is a disease of the colon. I was taken into hospital, in a accident emergency, and they immediately put me on to a rehydration drip, and also a drip of steroids. And I woke up on the steroids, because up till then I had been really exhausted and I had no energy, and suddenly they put these steroids in me and I was like, where's the party? Because my body doesn't know the difference, and I wanted to use, and it was really weird. And I thought, what is going on here? And I spent time in the hospital looking at these little vials that they put in. I think I need to get the name of these for when I get out of hospital. I need to get these because they were making me feel different. Things moved on from there, you know. The disease I've had, the ulcerative colitis, and it's been and gone back and forth. And I've been into hospital again in October last year. I was admitted again. Again, they put me on steroids, and I wanted to use. And I was telling my friend, I said, I can't believe it, I want to use drugs. And he said, you wanted to do that the last time you were here, Stephen. And I didn't even remember. My disease is so clever, it didn't even remember that, you know. It forgot that very conveniently. So today I saw the consultant, and I'm supposed to be having 3 operations, and my self-will has fought the operations, and it has said, no, give me more medication, try something else. And I've had 3 different types of medication. I've had infusions, I've had chemotherapy, I've had steroids till I was going crazy on steroids when I came out of hospital in November. I sat on my kitchen floor and I thought, I actually want to use because I feel so bloody crazy. The anxiety level and the this insanity of it and the anger and the, it was like using in a way, you know. But I had to have them, you know, to keep me well. So I guess I know that when I use drugs in any form, my addiction is released all over again. You release our addiction all over again, because I really felt at times like I was using. And I'd be asked to do shares and I would say, do you know what? No, I actually don't feel clean at the moment. I'm not saying I wasn't clean, because it was medical, but I didn't feel it. Anyway, so when I saw the consultant this morning, you're supposed to consult with the consultant. I waited for an hour and 10 minutes to consult with that man. And then he told me, he said, well, there's this operation, what do you think about that? And I said, the same thing as I thought in December, I want to go ahead with it. And he was like, oh, we don't have that on the records. And I'm like, okay. And so he said, but we can start the process. I can book you in. And he's doing all this on computer. And I said, so when's it going to happen? And he said, well, I have no idea. And it's taken me a long time to get acceptance around that to have the operation and whatever, because it's going to be, they're going to take part of my colon out. I'm going to have a stoma. For a while, and then 4 months later they're going to put what I'm going to refer to as a U-bend, because I don't know any other word for it, and then they're going to join the two together and the stoma is going to come away. I can do that, I can face all of that clean. When I was first hospitalized, I was talking to my sister, and she said, you know, Stephen, it's so good that you're clean. She said, because you wouldn't even be in that hospital if you weren't clean. She said, you wouldn't stay in that hospital, and I wouldn't, you know. Actually, I'm going to share this. It's the last time I was hospitalized, there was a guy in the next room, and he was basically incontinent and was on the floor around him and whatever, and he was one of us, and he was a using addict. And he'd like, had been, people thought that he was okay, and somebody went around and found him, and they brought him into hospital in that state, you know, and that could have been me. Anyway, moving on. Let's move on to something a bit more cheerful, shall we? Yes, being in recovery. I'm big on service in recovery, and I think that's because of my gratitude for this fellowship. You know, it talks in step 12 about people doing service and different types of service, and some people do the phone line because that's how they came in, and some people do H&I because that's how they heard the message. I did the phone line when I first came in, because I came in via the phone line. I hadn't slept for 4 days, and I thought I was on the phone to another organisation, and they told me there was a meeting across the road, and I'm thinking, yeah, but it's Christmas, you people aren't supposed to be there. Because even though I wanted recovery, I didn't want recovery. My head was saying, enough now, Stephen, and yet my heart, something in me was saying, no, you can carry on, you can still go on. That lie that I could still go on. You know, I say about drugs, I used to take drugs, then I used drugs, then I abused drugs, and that's what drugs did to me. They took me, and they used me, and they abused me, until I was a lonely person, and I had no real relationship with my family. I come from a very close-knit family. We're a good Catholic family. There's 8 of us. One of us died of this disease. I had a brother that was electrocuted when I was in my teens. But I'd lost them. I phoned one sister every 2-3 months, and that was the only contact I had. I lost my job. I got redundancy. I'm never quite sure how that happened, really. I do remember not going back to work after my sister had committed suicide. I went into a great deal of self-pity and a little bit of anger, because that was my opt-out clause. I thought if my using gets too bad, that's what I'll do, I'll commit suicide. And they, my sister-in-law died of cancer. And I went home and I was using, and it was all a bit crazy. And then 3 months later, my sister committed suicide. And during that time, my boyfriend, I call him a boyfriend, but he was more of a, we were using buddies who occasionally had sex. It was kind of like that, really. And during that time, his mother and grandmother died, all in the same period. So when he came home from his grandmother's funeral, the police had just been to my door to tell me my sister had died. I have 5 sisters. I knew immediately. I said, Olive, Australia, suicide. Those are the 3 words I said to the police because I knew. And they said yes. And I remember them telling me to sit down and me being angry, thinking, don't tell me to sit down in my own house. Don't tell me to sit down in my own house. Now, I didn't need an excuse to use because I was already using, but by God, I used after that. And I used in many ways. Christina referred to it, you know, about different manifestations of the disease, whether it's trying to control our eating or whether it's sex. You know, I slept my way across London. I remember sharing in a meeting that I think I've slept with probably 2,500-3,000 men. Somebody said to me, oh, you must be a sex addict. And I said, no, I was just very attractive. But actually, you know, it was another manifestation of my addiction. And after my mother died, that's what I did. And after my sister died, that's what I did. And I was just using, I was fixing. And I can fix on anything. I can fix on shopping, I can fix on specific items of clothes, I can fix on scarves, I can fix on socks. I was late for the first my first convention, Clean Time Countdown, because I couldn't find a pair of socks to match my outfit. Now I have enough socks. I match my outfits. My sister's death was something else. I've got enough time to tell this story, so I'm going to tell it. So my sister dies in Australia. She commits suicide. She's a lesbian. She's the black sheep of the family. I'm the pink sheep. And she's committed suicide. And my brother has just lost his wife, so he doesn't really want to get involved. My other sisters live in Canada. My sister that lives in Ireland, she's a lovely woman. But boy, does she love to hug that altar rail and kiss that priest. Sorry, kiss the altar rail and hug the priest. She really, really is very, very Catholic. I guess I'm a recovering Catholic. So she didn't want to get involved either. And here's me using. And I'm supposed to get the remains home to Ireland somehow from this girlfriend who's 20 years younger. And that's a family trait, but it's still not happening for me. My brother's married to a woman 22 years younger, but I still can't find this man 20 years younger than me. Anyway, so I'm trying to organize to get my sister's remains home while off my head. And so I'm in this place of anger, resentment, all sorts of emotions going on, and feel that it shouldn't be me doing it anyway. And I'm talking to this girlfriend in Australia, and whatever happened, my sister's remains got put in the Christmas post. And this woman had never heard of DHL or whatever. So she got lost in the Christmas post. So my sisters came home from Canada for my sister's funeral. I came home for the sister's funeral. My sister, who was in Ireland, who had a resentment, who didn't want her even buried in the family grave, was there for the funeral, and she sat very stiff the whole time. God love her, you know, it was difficult for her. And my sister didn't arrive. Not only that, in Ireland, if you're a farmer, and I'm the son of a farmer, they do this thing called redding up. So after you've fed the cows, and you've milked the cows, and you've done all that, you brush up, and you clean up, and you've red up, and then you can have breakfast. And that normally happens by 10:30, 11 o'clock. So my sister has organized the funeral for 10 because she doesn't want many people to attend. So I say, well, maybe we can change it to 11. So I speak to the priest and I say, could we change it to 11? Oh, yes, we could do that, Stephen. Could. I didn't arrange it. So all my sisters have come home and we're in the chapel And there's no lights, and it's feeling a bit cold, and this doddery old priest comes in, and he looks at me, and he says, where's Father Downey, or whatever his name was? And I'm like, well, he's not here, Father. And he said, oh, he must be in Crumlin. I thought the funeral was at 11, and I said, no, it's at 10. So I'm like going out to phone the thing, and this priest says, it's all right, I'll talk to the congregation. And I'm thinking, I really wish you wouldn't. I really rather wish you wouldn't. So I could hear him as I was leaving the chapel saying, it's been an awful time for the family. There's Philip, and he just lost his wife, and them little girls have lost their mother, and it's been an awful time, and the sister in Australia and everything. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this is like Father Ted. I cannot believe what is happening. Anyway, the priest arrived, and my sister done us the honour. I came back to London, and my sister done us the honour of arriving between Christmas and New Year, so I had to fly back again. Cost me a fortune, that the whole thing. And do you know, she would have loved every minute of it. She would have loved every minute of it. And my other sister said to me, Stephen, because my sisters had gone back to Canada by this time. So there's only one sister from Canada, and the angry sister in Ireland, and myself, and my brother, who can't get involved, you know. He's got too much pain of his own. And he said, so my sister said to me, so Stephen, you're going to carry the remains in, and then you're going to speak, and then you'll carry the remains out. And I'm like, oh, do you just want me to do everything then, Wyatt? I'll just do everything, you know. Now, why am I telling this story? I guess it's because this is what I went through when I was using, and this is what I used on, and this is the excuse that I used on. And actually, I so wish I'd been clean for my sister's funeral. I so wish I'd been able to do it with a clear head. The only, you know, sometimes when you think about pain and you think, what was it all about? Her pain was to get me here. Her death got me here, because there's no way I was going to do what she did. No way that was going to happen. I had to come here for my sister. Yeah. I love Narcotics Anonymous. I love what Narcotics Anonymous has done for me. I remember, you know, talks in the reading about our social skills, losing our social skills and being reduced to an animal level. And I had two pairs of underwear when I came into this fellowship, and I have about 40. But that's where I was at, you know. And I remember reading that and thinking, no, I have social skills. I'm quite sociable. But I didn't. I'd forgotten how to be nice to people. I'd forgotten how to be kind. And I came to meetings, and I heard people share, and it kind of eventually kind of went into my head, and then over a period of time it settled in my heart, and I felt NA here. I felt the love of NA. I felt what this fellowship can do. You know, I say to sponsees, there's only one thing you need to change: everything. And that has been true for me. I have changed almost everything. I've had a couple of friends come and go and into the fellowship and out of the fellowship again, who are still out there using. And one, I think he's back in the fellowship outside of London. And when he came in, and I was talking to somebody, and I gave this person a compliment, and he said, now wait for the backhand, or it'll be there any minute. And then he looked at me, and he's like, and there was no backhander. Because I'm not coming in with the underscore to take you down. I'm going to give you a compliment and leave it at that. That's a change. That's a change, you know. The spiritual principles of this are amazing, and there's something to aspire to. And I do aspire to them. Sometimes I get it right. Sometimes I get it very wrong. But we have a program where if I get it wrong, I can try and go back and put it right and do a step 10 around it. There's the other thing about, you know, one of my favorite things that we say in this fellowship is, you know, our gratitude speaks when we care and when we share the NA way. Now, When I share the NA way, that means I have a story. I have something to tell. I have something to share. And I have somewhere to bring it. And I have people who will listen to that. And I will do the same when you share. And I will listen. And in that happening, something amazing happens. Because sometimes all I want is to put my story out there. Because sometimes I hear it and I think, that's absolutely beautiful. And sometimes I hear it and I think, the goddamn idea is that. What are you thinking about, Stephen? That's absolutely crazy. But sometimes I have to hear myself say it. And I think about my sister who's angry in Ireland. And I think she has nowhere to take her story. She has nowhere to take her story. She has nowhere to be heard in the way that we are heard, you know. Because when I say it in a meeting and I put it out there, there's nobody saying, well, occasionally people cross share, but usually people just listen, you know. This year, I'm definitely going to Switzerland. I'm going to Germany. I've been asked to go to Germany. I'm going to Ireland and I might go to Canada. When I came into recovery, I'd spent 5 to 8 years doing a kind of triangle of Bethnal Green. I'd do my house, the dealer, the offie, maybe the supermarket. That was kind of my life, you know. I remember I was seeing this psychologist for a while. I didn't really give her much chance because I used to go off my head. And I don't know why she never said to me, you know, have you been using drugs? But she never did say it. And it was really clear to me that it was clear to her. And she said to me one day, she said, Stephen, you've built yourself a playpen. She said, it's got the off license and the dealer and the Tesco's and whatever. And I said, playpen? I said, you come play with me, it's not much fun. You come play with me, it's not much fun where I'm living right now, you know. But I didn't know the way out. I didn't know the way out until I came here. And I came here and I heard you. And what really, really stood out for me was the fact that people's stories were credible. You know, it says in our literature, a simple, honest message of recovery rings true. And again, I hear that, whether it's somebody that's very articulate or whether it's somebody that's just speaking gut-wrenching from the heart, you know. And sometimes when people just cry, there's such a message in that as well, just that pain, because I feel it, I've been there. I know your pain, you know my pain, you know. I spent the longest time in my life wanting to belong. I left Ireland and came to London. I came to London for the bright lights, came to London for the theatre. Somehow that didn't happen. I found the underbelly of London and somehow took to the dark side and kind of felt like it was exciting and it was fun, and for a while it was, you know. But I put a picture of me on social media today when I was in my 20s, and that kid was ready to be taken, you know. London was ready to suck me out and spit me out, you know, and that's what it did to me. And I allowed it to, you know, as a willing partner in that. But it's not like that today. It really isn't like that today, you know. Narcotics Anonymous say that any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. I came here and I got hope. In my very first meeting, I left feeling good and I didn't know what the feeling was, but I felt hope, that's what I felt. I remember being in early meetings and this friend of mine saying to me, so how do you feel about that, Stephen? And I'm thinking, feel? What do you mean, feel? I'm from a farm in Ireland, we don't talk about feeling, you know, feel. It was very, very strange. And today, I had many feelings today. It's really weird, because I kind of spoke to about three people after I left the hospital, and I reached out, that's what I do. And I didn't, I felt a bit angry, I felt pissed off, I felt a bit anxious, I felt a bit frightened, and then I had this shit chair coming up, and I thought, am I nervous about that, am I, what's going on, and then I thought to myself, do you know what, it actually doesn't matter. Today I just have feelings, and it's okay, I don't need to label each one and know exactly what it's about, it's absolutely okay. And that's been true for me in my recovery as well, and some people would disagree with this, but it has been my experience, you know. And I say it very often, it'll be okay in the end, and if it's not okay, it's not the end. When I was in that hospital bed first time, and they were talking about cutting me up, and they introduced me to the surgeon at the end of the bed, it didn't feel like it was going to be okay in the end, and it's still not the end, but I know it will be okay. I had so many people come and visit me in hospital. I did a very severe step too. I hit that phone and I texted people and I said, I'm in hospital, can you come and visit me? And people said they could or they couldn't, and I went to the next one and texted the next one, and lots of people came and visited me on both occasions when I was in hospital. The nurse said to me, she said, are you a celebrity? So I told her the truth, I said yes. She was desperate to know who I was. The second time, you know, I don't know, the second time as I was on steroids, I was doolally. You know, I was either up or I was down. And when I was up, I was going to make these three nurses into a dance group, and I was going to take them on X Factor and whatever. I was absolutely off my head, but at the time I couldn't see it, you know, I just, yeah. My family. You know, I've done the steps a couple of times, I'm doing the steps again. I believe that if I'm not working on my recovery, if I'm not doing something, then, and I heard somebody share something like it in the convention, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. My first spiritual awakening was when I walked in here and I left the meeting with hope. My spirit began to come awake. If I'm not working on my recovery, then my spirit is not being fed. And if my spirit is not being fed, then the disease might we have a wee chance. And not that long ago, I'd spoken to, after the last time I saw the consultant, who clearly lied to me and said, you'll have your operation in 6 to 8 weeks. And I left the hospital, and the next morning I woke up and I had a little bit of anxiety. And by the following morning I had a lot of anxiety. And by the Saturday morning I didn't even want to get out of bed. And I thought to myself, I could go to the off license. Where the hell did that come from? Oh, guess what, you know, I'm an addict. And my solution would be that. But not anymore. You know, that kind of came and it went, and I reached out, and luckily that night I was going to a theatre with a few friends, you know. Yeah, the theatre. I go to the theatre a lot, and I'm very blessed, and God has been good to me in that respect. The thing that I came to London to do, I'm doing. I'm also going to start a course, and I'm going to write a play. Because I can. Because you know what, in recovery you can do anything if you want to enough, and I want to enough, you know, I want to enough. I've been going to see these plays and I'm thinking I could do better, or that's really good, or I like that, or whatever, you know. And that the story that I'm probably going to tell is the night before a funeral and the night after a funeral, and the family secrets that come up and whatever, you know. Yeah, I think it'll be okay. With a bit of dark humour in there as well. I've just given the plot away. Do you think anybody will steal it, Penelope? I don't think so. Is that my time left?
Yes.
Okay. So it was when you're getting down to the thing, you want to say something really important and like really deep and meaningful that you can take away with you and like... You know, I came a bit like Christina was saying, I came here and did what they said, and I'm clean. But there have been times when it's been difficult and life throws you curveballs. And I've asked myself when I was in hospital the first time with colitis, I thought, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me, you know? And it's a weird thing. I work part-time, and I work part-time with people with long-term chronic diseases. And I'm able to share my experience with them in the same way that people here share their experience with addicts. It's a weird thing, you know. And I love that work, you know. I worked for a corporate company for years. And I was a fake. Boy, that's a big old fake. My very first promotion, you had different ways you could get promotion. You could get promotion if you waited around long enough. It was a bit like the civil service, but it wasn't. If you waited around long enough, you could get a promotion. If you were recommended, you could get a promotion. Or you could have accelerated promotion when you did an exam. And if you passed the exam, then you'd get a promotion. So I thought, well, I'm not sure I can pass the exam, but I know a man who can. So this bloody man that can got the highest marks ever recorded in the company in the damned exam, and they all thought it was me. And that was the start of my career. And so a little bit of fear involved there, you know, a little bit of fear. When are they going to find out? When are they going to find out? I mean, I had several promotions after that, but that was still at the back of my head. I've made amends to my family, and most of it is really good. I still struggle with one sister. I do the best I can, you know. I said to somebody last night, if I can come from a place of love, and sometimes I forget to do that. I forget to come from a place of love and to see that other person, as a human being, because she is just another person being, you know, and she's doing being to the best of her ability. I love what the tools of Narcotics Anonymous have given me. I love the fellowship. I love the fact that, you know, somebody can walk into a meeting and I can ask them to share at my home group the next week and they can become one of my best friends. I love the fact that I can go to a convention, meet a complete stranger from another part of the world and spend the next 2 weeks during her holiday. I love Narcotics Anonymous for that. I love the fact that my best friend in the fellowship is a Bangladeshi boy from Brick Lane. Like, what have I got in common with him? I've got the disease of addiction. We got out, you know, we got out and we have that in common. Thank you all for listening. Thank you.